Welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols. I'm here in Boston at the site of tonight's Brooklyn Nets Boston Celtics game. Richard Jefferson is alone in the studio, and I'm a little worried about him.
Never been happier. Never been happier.
And we got the 2008 champ and Richard's best friend, Kedren Perkins, on with him. So, Perk, are you guys going to play nice today?
I mean, it depends. It depends on his actions, okay? That's how I feel. If he want to go there, then we could go there. It's no problem.
Well, let's get into it.
There we go. Let's get, in fact, right into Lakers-Suns. LeBron and AD combining for 55 points in the win last night to get the Lakers a 2-1 lead in the series. After the game, Lakers coach Frank Vogel spoke about the lift he got from his stars last night. Take a listen.
It changed the whole game. You know, his mindset just reversed the whole course of tonight's game. You know, wanting to get to the rim. And, you know, our whole group did. Like AD, even though he had, was dinged up with his knee and was a little bit hobbled, really committed to what worked for us in game two, which is really running the floor, being the first big down, putting pressure on their transition defense. And that opened up a lot of driving lanes for Brown, who mentally made the decision to get downhill and just live in the paint and live at the rim. He was dominant during that stretch. And, you know, those two guys really reversed the whole course of the game.
So, Richard, he made reference there to Anthony Davis's knee. He does have a couple days to rest it, though. And with AD and LeBron seeming to get better as this series has gone along, how has your perspective on the Lakers changed over these last two games?
Well, I don't think it's changed at all. I think as the further along this series goes, you knew that the Lakers were going to be in better conditioning. They weren't in playoff conditioning. All the time we always talk about, oh, you got to get in game shape. Well, you also have to be in playoff shape, and that's another level above just game shape. And they didn't play a ton of games over the course of the last 2 months. And so for me, it was all about the longer this series went on, the stronger the Lakers were going to get. The injury to Chris Paul, I think, sped up this process. But ultimately, this is what you expect from the Lakers.
Absolutely. And Rachel, you mentioned that they had 55 points between the both of them. 38 of those points were in the paint. And that's how dominant they were. You know, the Lakers overall shot 7-for-28 from the three and won this game because they play with identity. They make you play their style of basketball. And they're playing old school basketball right now. We're watching LeBron James do something that we haven't seen him do in a long time. And he took guys to the post, especially Jay Crowder. We're watching Anthony Davis run the floor, get to the paint, not being allergic to the paint, not settling for jumpers in attack mode, get to the free throw line, establishing their identity. Look at this beautiful spin move right here, Rachel and RJ.
Travel.
This is what RJ used to get at
right, travel.
When he used to try to
guard
Brown.
Look at Drummond on the bench
exactly behind
him, by the way.
Used to get this work right here. This is the LeBron James that people are scared of, and he's getting his legs up under him, like RJ said. And this is the LeBron that's going to continue to get better throughout the playoffs.
But Perk, really quickly, I want everyone to listen to me on this. Anthony Davis, when people call you a top five talent, that is an insult. Make no mistake about it. When they call you a top five talent and not a top five player, which means that you have all the talent, but you're not quite living up to what your talent is. Allows you to do. So on any given night, he could be the best player on the floor, regardless if it's Steph, KD, LeBron James, James Harden, he could be the best player on the floor. That's what the term talent is. The reason why that talent doesn't mean he's a top five player is because top five players do it every single night. They do it every single night. And when he averages 10 or more free throws, the Lakers' winning percentage goes through the roof. He had 5 in game one, and then he had 21 and then 14 in game two. That's a level of aggressiveness. But until he does it every single night, he's still going to be considered a top five talent and not a top five player.
Right, but Richard, some of it, of course, is heart and hustle, willingness to go into the paint, willingness to play the five when called upon. But some of it, too, is when you break down the way the Suns were defending him in the first game, Frank Vogel came back and made adjustments to the way he asked AD to play that got to break some of those coverages. So I think the fact that he figured some of that out is a good sign for the Lakers. But then again, you know, Chris Paul and Devin Booker and Monty Williams have a couple days to figure things out at counter as well. I don't think the series is over. By a long stretch, I guess. Well, you think this is it, Perk? Do you think the series is basically over? Because I don't.
Yeah, yeah. Monty Williams, Jay Williams, Roy Williams, Lakers at five.
Amazing. If we could get a Photoshop of you with the cigarette out of your mouth by the end of the show, I'll be happy. Let's talk a little bit more about Chris Paul, because his teams have lost 11 consecutive playoff games when officiated by Scott Foster, a fact that he made mention of after the game. Take a listen.
We got to try to, you know, limit their free throw attempts. You know, they're shooting a lot of free throws last game tonight. I mean, if I was a betting man, 11 games in a row. 11 games in a row. And we'll see what happens.
Thank you for the time, Chris.
11 in a row is tough.
He wants to get that out there. They're trying to pull him off. And he's like, let me tell you that one more time. These are the 11 games that CP3 referenced. Paul's team was favored in seven of these games. Some really memorable ones here, including last year's Game 7 with OKC against the Rockets. So, Perk, what is your reaction to this? Because I do want to note Scott Foster consistently grades out as one of the most consistent and accurate officials in the league. Just, I mean, that's what the numbers that the NBA says.
He is, Rachel. And look, one thing about Scott Foster is that he doesn't care who you are. He is going to officiate the game the way, and he's going to call it like he see it. Like, to me, with CP3 going out and saying that, and I respect CP3, but I don't agree with his comments after the post game. When you look at Scott Foster, he's not afraid of superstars. He's not afraid to call those calls on certain guys. Even looking at this clip right here, he could have gave CP3 a tech, but he didn't. And on top of that, look, CP3 bullies his way through other officiating. Like, he gets away with a lot of things that Scott Foster is not going to let him get away with. He fouls. He has hand checking that. I'd be like, that's a foul. And he gets away with that, talking crazy to other officials. He's not going to do that to Scott Foster.
Yeah, and look, didn't we just see LaMelo get a technical for getting the referee's hands off of him? Didn't we just see that? How about talking about that? And look, I understand, Chris Paul, you are the best, in my opinion, the best, like, pure point guard of this generation. What you've done, for the length of which you've done it. But we saw LaMelo Ball get a technical for doing this thing. He's just trying to make sure that you're okay, and you smack your arm off of him. These are the things when Chris was the head of the Players Association and he was a part of that, he would go and, like, contact and say the officials were doing this. No one cares, Chris, because at the end of the day, your hand, your hamstring, and now your shoulder have been more responsible for some of the struggles that you have been a part of over the course of the postseason than Scott Foster. You're too good of a player. You're too great of a player to be pointing out Scott Foster's, you know, refereeing when he, like, grades out as one of the best officials. Yes. That means he gets his percentages right. So if you're losing games that this man is getting right, can't look at him. You got to look at something else.
I mean, Rachel, RJ, think about this, right? Just think about this for a second. Scott Foster is as one of the officials in today's game. He's probably at the top for his ref officiating the finals. And we all know how crucial that is to make it to the finals, because you have to have that resume and you have to have that respect to officiate the finals. Look, I guarantee you, you could go back to players that are retired, stars that are currently playing right now, and they'll tell you, Scott Foster have been the same. He officiates the game the same. And that's just Scott Foster.
Yeah,
that's
old school rap. He reminds me of the Steve Javies. He reminds me of the Dick Bavettas. He reminds me of the guys that, like, when I go on a road game, I want to see Scott Foster. If I'm going into a road game on the playoffs, game seven, I want to see a guy that doesn't care about who's on the other team, what building we're in, or what the fans are saying. Scott does not care, and that's the type of official that I would want in a game seven.
Yeah, a lot of guys feel that way about Scott. And look, there are guys who feel the way Chris Paul does, and I have respect for him, respect for his opinion. And it must be frustrating to look at a number like 11 in a row, but this just isn't the way that the NBA grades these officials out. Scott Foster has consistently graded over and over again as one of their best. Now, I don't know if Chris is going to draw a fine for those comments. He has drawn a fine for his comments about the officiating before. I don't know about these comments I'm about to play you, gentlemen. In the fourth quarter last night, Devin Booker assessed a flagrant 2 foul for this push to the back of Dennis Schroeder while he was in the air. And here was Anthony Davis's comment after taking a look at this. He was not happy. Watch it again here. Take a look. Okay, and now take a listen to Anthony Davis.
Can't happen. Can't do that. I mean, they've been chirping this playoff basketball, but you don't push a guy out the air like that, 2 hands. It's a dirty play. Dennis could have really got hurt right there. You know, we keep it in between the lines. You know, we never want to, and I know Monty, you know, he's not that type of coach. I mean, he's probably going to say something to him, but my coach for 3 years, but, you know, that just can't happen. You know, hard fouls, things like that, playoff basketball, we accept those, but, you know, just to blatantly push a guy, you know, with 2 hands out the air, it's a scary play. You know, good thing he's okay, but plays like that, you know, is unacceptable.
Richard, what do you think? Is that a dirty play from Booker, the way AD phrased it?
Yeah, look, it's dirty play. We move on. This is the issue. Devin Booker, this is your first, like, postseason. And teams are watching. Everybody's watching how you handle adversity, right? Like, Schroeder, like, if you pushed him in the air, if he falls on his shoulders and he is out, and we've seen this over the course of postseason, you would never allow somebody to do that to you. You would never. And for you to do that to a player, and especially you as a superstar, understand, like, you're a scorer. And people typically, they react back when players do that type of stuff. It's not excusable. Devin Booker knows that. But yeah, it's inexcusable, and just move on from there.
Well, I mean, yes, easy. I mean, I agree with you, RJ, but to be honest, I thought it was a flagrant 2 and they should have got a suspension.
Oh, wow.
After watching this film over and over again, Dennis could have tore his ACL or something the way that his legs buckle. Like, you can't do that. And I feel Devin Booker's frustration being his first time in the playoffs, and he's getting accustomed to the physicality, and he's a competitor. But you just can't have this happen. Like, he could have really hurt himself.
He's lucky that he pushed him into Jay Crowder that actually broke his fall and took some of the momentum away. So, like, we didn't even – like, that impact would have been far worse if Jay Crowder didn't, like, absorb it and redirect him to the other direction. That's one of those things. Like, he would have gone another 5-6 feet the other direction if it wasn't for Jay Crowder.
Well, this is 3 topics in a row you guys have agreed on. So I think, A, this is a record,
and B, early.
I am excited about seeing the love for the rest of this show. Stay tuned, because in addition to the love between Perk and RJ, we've got Nikola Jokic torching the Blazers yet again last night. What adjustments does Portland need to make down 2-1 in this series? Can I pronounce the name of the river that runs through the city? We will find out in the next segment. On this date in 2014, Lance Stephenson blew in the ear of LeBron James during the Eastern Conference Finals. Richard, you're good at trolling. What did the guys in the league say about this at the time?
Oh, that's hilarious, man. It's like you would see, look, our guy JR, you would see stuff with Dennis Rodman. It's just poking and prodding, messing with guys, doing anything you can. I dig it.
You dig it. I mean, I didn't know. I was just trying to see, did he think of this the night before, or did he come up with this on the fly?
On the fly. Just distract them. There were nothing else was going to work.
When they started playing on the same team together, that's when I knew that's the NBA apocalypse right there. Let's talk a little bit more about Portland-Denver. Portland won the opener. Denver, though, has looked like the much better team in the remaining games of this series. They're now up 2-1. Like, last night was weird at some points. Portland up by as many as 9 in the first. Then Enes Kanter checked in. And, guys, the Nuggets immediately went on a 16-1 run, and Portland never held the lead again. Take a look at Kanter this series. Now, it's important to note that Nurkic has fouled out of the last 2 games, so Portland doesn't have a ton of options to defend Jokic. And let's be honest, he's tabbed to be the MVP of the league. Not a lot of people have a lot of options to guard Jokic. Still, after the game, Jason Quick at The Athletic asked Coach Stotts about that first quarter run. This is amazing. Take a listen.
Coach, one of the turning points was the last 5 minutes of the first quarter. And then essentially, Enes doesn't play again. Can you kind of explain what went behind that decision?
Which decision are you talking about?
To not play Enes anymore, essentially.
We had a bad stretch. He was a minus 15 in that 5 minutes. It was a tough matchup, so decided to bring Rondé in the second half. It's kind of obvious.
Yeah.
Perk, you were very outspoken about Portland's game plan on Twitter. What do they need to do to get game four a victory and even up this series?
Well, first of all, Nurkic got to show up to the party. The series has started. Look, this Denver Nuggets team had traded him. He should have some type of heart of revenge in them to go at Big Jokic or try to stop him. Second of all, we shouldn't be surprised if Enes Kanter. He has been one of the worst defensive bigs since he stepped foot in the NBA, whether that's in a pick and roll or him having to guard straight up. So they're going to have to figure it out or they're going home. This is why I say that you have to play defense in the playoffs. But this has carried on because they ranked dead last defensively in the regular season.
Well, and look, I'm going to say this. Enes Kanter is part of the reason why the Portland Trailblazers are in this position. When they had injuries across the board, when Nurkic was out, when CJ was missing time, Enes Kanter played great. Now, is this the series for Enes Kanter? Absolutely not. Is he a good defender? Is he? No, but let's not disrespect him. He's playing against the MVP. We've seen him put up better numbers against Joel Embiid, against Giannis. We've seen him put these numbers up against Anthony Davis. So what do we think he's going to do as it's Enes Kanter. He's going to destroy him. They're going to go at him in pick and roll. Enes Kanter is not the reason why you're losing these games.
First of all, I didn't just say.
I'm not talking about you.
Okay,
I'm just talking about in general.
I'm telling you, RJ. I'm telling you that I said it's been the history over the past since he's been in the league. Not against Jokic. He's been a horrible pick and roll defender. He's been a horrible post defender.
Look, we got to go to break. You guys can keep arguing about this in the commercial. I'm going to let you keep going. Everybody else, you stick with me because coming up, we've got a spicy game three on the docket tonight. Knicks Hawks shift into Atlanta. What do the Hawks need to do to go up 2-1? What about the Knickerbockers? We'll break it down next, and these two guys may still be having the same argument. Keep it locked.
Bald, beautiful, headshot, glamour, mini horse, still bald, still beautiful. Richard Jefferson and Kendrick Perkins starring in The Bald and the Beautiful.
Hey, cool. Don't sass me.
I don't get sassy.
Sass me.
Welcome back to the show presented by Dell.
Yes, I love it.
Richard, how proud of you are of having your own show within a show?
I'm going to be really honest. Like, my expectations for Perk were really, really low, and he has exceeded them.
I think the expectations for the entire intro, the mini horse in particular, should not be slept on. And there's a photo of, I believe, you, Richard, with Obama, which I'd like to know when that happened. But anyway.
We have a couple pictures together. We don't like to talk about it.
Let's take a look, guys.
What's up, man?
At today's Top Shot of the Week, brought to you by Walgreens. On Sunday, Trae Young hit that game-winning floater in Madison Square Garden in what happened to be his first career playoff game. Trae embraced the role of the villain in New York, but tonight the series shifts to Atlanta, tied at a game apiece. So, Perk, what is the key to tonight's pivotal Game 3?
Well, the role players just got to come up better at home, right, and make shots. When you look at the game in Game 2, Bogdanovich and even Hunter, they miss wide open threes. And John Collins, we're talking about a guy that averaged 17 points in the regular season. He has 0 points in Game 2. He will play better in front of 18,000 fans in Atlanta. The role players will play better at home to help the Atlanta Hawks get this win tonight.
Okay, now this is one thing I want to say. Nate McMillan has done a great job. He's done a great
Absolutely.
Job there. Outstanding job. But sometimes when you get to the postseason, you can see a poorly constructed team and you can say, like, hey, the GM needs to go get this. Or if players like John Collins doesn't perform, you see players need to do this. There was a moment there during that second half where Nate McMillan kept his scores on the bigs. Bogdanovich and Trae Young kept them on the bench for way too long. He called multiple timeouts and that run got extended. Then they get back into the game. They go on a 9-0 run, but then the Knicks answer and it's a minute and a half too late. He's got to shore up these lineups. You can't have all of your offense or most of your offense on the sideline during these runs, not during the postseason. Trae Young might have to play 42, 43 minutes. You might have to extend Bogdanovich a little bit. So, in my opinion, the biggest adjustment for the Hawks have to be how they clean up their lineups.
Well, I am interested. Well, what do you have to say, Perk?
No, but I'm saying because he wasn't saying that in game one when the Hawks were down.
And you're not going to talk about John Collins if he has 20 points and then has zero points in the next game.
But what I'm saying is you weren't saying that game one when Trey was on the bench towards the end of the third and Lou Will was the one that came back and put them in striking range. But he was still rolling with that same lineup then.
I understand that, but that was an extended stretch. That was an extended stretch of them getting that momentum. That's all I'm saying. Yes, what works for you on one game might not work on game two. So obviously the Knicks made an adjustment, and when Trey and Bogdanovich was out of the game, that's when they made their run. That means you might have to shorten it up.
The Knicks' adjustment was starting Derrick Rose and leaving him in when it mattered the most and rolling with Taj Gibson.
So they switched up what they did. So the Atlanta Hawks have to answer. If a team is switching it up and they're successful, then you have to let them in.
Well, I like that he rolled out just pretty much the 2010-2011 Bulls on the floor. I am interested to see what happens in Atlanta because, look, Trae Young did as well as you could in that crazy Madison Square Garden environment. He said he didn't even realize in the moment that a fan spit on him. We will put that to the side. But just the fans who were bringing the good energy to MSG, and he was able to flourish there. I do want to see on the other end because, Perk, you are right. In Atlanta, they intend on having a full building tonight. And we will see how the younger players, not the old Bulls, old heads, but the younger players on the Knicks, how they do in that environment in Atlanta. I am eager to see that. Now, speaking of fan behavior, three Utah Jazz fans have been banned for their comments toward T and Jamie Morant. These are the parents of Ja Morant. In a phone interview with our Tim McMahon, T elaborated on the racist and lewd comments from those three fans. He said one fan made a sexually explicit remark to his wife. Mm. Security ejected that fan. According to T Morant, another Jazz fan told him, quote, "I will put a nickel in your back and watch you dance, boy." I will be honest, guys, that is hard for me to even read out loud. I cannot believe someone said that to Ja Morant's father. Several other Jazz fans who have been enjoying good, spirited trash talk, the nice kind of trash talk with the Morants and their family friends, actually turned on those other more lewd Jazz fans and confronted them and alerted security on the Morant family's behalf. So shout out to the Jazz fans who wanted to help in that situation. There was a third fan who was ejected for yelling at Jamie Morant, Ja's mother. Shut up, expletive, expletive. Jazz part owner Dwayne Wade apologized on Twitter, writing, quote, "If we turn our backs on this kind of behavior, we are all a part of the problem. This will not be tolerated. Apologies once again to Ja and his family." Perk, what is your reaction to these comments the Morant family had to endure from those particular Jazz fans?
Well, I mean, it's disturbing, right? And I went through it during my playing career when I was in Memphis. My pregnant wife was in the stands, and she got into a verbal altercation with a fan in Memphis because of something that was said racist, right? But all I can say is this, Rachel. I have a solution to the problem. When you're a road team and you have family members, loved ones, and friends that are coming to the game, I think these organizations need to come together and say, you know what, we're going to isolate them and put them in suites where they don't have to deal with that type of nonsense. So, you know, I hate to hear that, you know, about what happened with Ja's parents, but I just wanted to give that idea for us a solution to the problem.
Well, let me first say this. After having played in Utah during not a great stretch, like we weren't very good that year, they were in the lottery, the fans were amazing. The fans in Utah were very supportive. They were awesome. So these individuals do not represent the Utah community. I'm glad that D. Wade came out and spoke out against this. I'm glad to hear that Utah fans turned against these individuals. That being said, to Perk's point, families do not belong on road environments. And it's not because of... Look, this lewd behavior and all that stuff, everyone in the world can admit that is disrespectful. But if you're focused on the game, you shouldn't be worried about some drunk fan, you know, saying something to your wife or your kid or your mom. I remember Jimmy Butler in the bubble said, look, this is a road trip. No one's coming. I'm not having my family come. Now, that's not for everybody, but ultimately there's enough incidences where if you're in the postseason, I think if you're in the postseason, I think you should not have your family there because you should be focused. That should be time for you and your team to get together. That's my opinion.
But Richard, I have to say, I disagree with both of you guys on that last point, only in that, look, as a woman, there are certainly things and experiences in society that are more dangerous for women in America. I don't want to hear, well, what you shouldn't do is walk through a dark parking lot at night. No, you should not have people coming out with knives and dangerous people in a dark parking lot at night. We shouldn't be limiting what families, what players have to do. We should be telling the fans who are behaving in a way that is flat out just unacceptable, and not just to the players' families. What about the other people in that section who had to hear what that fan said? There were children in that section. One of the points of Tim McMahon's article was that one of the people saying these horrible things to him and to Ja's father and to Ja's mother had a young daughter with her. That is the problem. Right. The problem is the fans. The problem is not the families. The families should be able to go attend their kids' games.
Rachel, that is 100% true. That is 100% true. But that's not the reality of the situation.
But
that's
we need to clean that up. This is not an unassailable problem. This is not a large-scale society thing. This is 20,000 people in one building. And as far as I'm concerned, if you mess up, you are never allowed in that building again. No, and possibly what the NBA should say is, you're not allowed in any of our buildings again.
No, Rachel, hold on. Listen, I agree with you. I didn't say that your family members shouldn't go to the game. All I'm saying is that this is going to happen, right? At the end of the day, we only could control what we can't control. I can't control, or my family can't control, what some fans are going to do. So I'm saying a solution to the problem that fans that family members that are traveling on the road is to isolate them, meaning put them up in the suite where they're safe and they don't have to do that. They can enjoy their son or their husband or their children enjoy their fathers. That was all I was saying. I just had a solution, really quickly,
I'll say this. 20 years ago, I was in an arena, and I heard the entire crowd chanting some unsavory things. Entire crowds. I'm not saying it was like, oh, they were direct. No, but there were people in the building, and all of a sudden, I was even hesitant to bring my family to Game 7 of the NBA Finals. Not because I thought that they were in danger, but I didn't want to be worried about any single thing other than playing the basketball game. And if you see something going on, if you see security up there, and your focus goes up to there, hey, what's going on? What are people doing there? I agree, it is not fair that families shouldn't be to have to tolerate this stuff, and the NBA and security need to do a better job. But the reality of the situation is right now, this is where we are, and it needs to improve.
I just think that it can be, look, as in all things, take a page from Twitter, right? Twitter blocks people, allows you to block people. I think we should block the fans that misbehave, not just from the arena that they misbehave in, but possibly never have them be in an NBA game again. And eventually you will have the right fans in the building, and that is what the NBA wants, so families can enjoy their sons. This way we could get a better crowd in there, because there's so many, as you say, Richard, there's so many good fans who really add to an environment. Those are the people we want in the building. All right, The Jump will be right back after this. We'll see what Richard and Perk argue about next. Stay tuned. All right, guys, sticking with Clippers Mavs, Luka has been on actual fire the first two games against the Clippers. Hasn't mattered who tried to guard him either. Richard, can anyone on the Clips slow down Luka?
No one can slow down Luka. They've tried physicality. They've tried to switch across the board. They actually had to send double teams, but they can't send a double team because of how well he passes the ball. So, like, they're really at a deficit. Do I think that they're going to do a better job in this game? Yes, but no one can.
Look, he just went through a double team. Forget passing out of it. He just went through one to the hoop. Kendrick, what's your confidence level in the Clippers entering game three?
I mean, it's hard for me to go against Ty Lue, but I mean, I don't really have confidence in the Clippers. Right now, the Dallas Mavericks are playing exceptional basketball, and then they're going home. They're going to have fans in the stands. And yes, we're talking about Luka, but Tim Hardaway Jr. is playing well. Brunson is playing well off the bench. They don't care. Like, they're not backing down from the Clippers, so my confidence level is not high for them at all. I don't even think they're going to leave Dallas with a win, to be honest with you.
You think they're going to get swept? Wow. I don't know about this, but one thing I will say about this is that talking to T. Lou earlier today, he basically said, like, they had some game plans that they need to improve on. They're actually adjusting their game plan because the game plan wasn't working. And, I mean, when you ask him, it's like, is it because the Dallas Mavericks are shooting the ball well, or is it because you're not following the game plan to a T? And he's like, it's probably a little bit of both. So he's trying to change his game plan. He's going to see some different things. You're going to show Luka everything that he's seen. But when you look at his numbers, they're next to Michael Jordan. They're next to LeBron James. They're next to Oscar Robertson. So it's like at some point, Magic Johnson. So at some point in time, we need to look at the history and realize that there was no answer to stopping those guys in that history book.
And that's why your confidence level shouldn't be high, because that's how he's playing. That proves my point.
Yeah. Well, Ty Lue,
what are you going to throw at him?
Ty Lue, with one of the more unusual quotes I've heard post-game after game two, he said, sure, they're shooting well here on the road where there's no pressure, but let's see them make those baskets at home. I don't normally hear coaches say that. Normally guys shoot well at home, so we'll have to see, guys, if that happened. Coming up, stick with us. I spoke to Jason Tatum this morning about the other game tonight, Nets-Celtics game three, Celtics season overall, and, of course, about those unruly NBA fans. Keep it locked. All right, guys, welcome back to The Jump. Rachel Nichols here in Boston. I'm joined by Richard Jefferson in L.A. Kendrick Perkins, who knows where Kendrick is? Texas at last spotted, but, we'll just have to see. I spoke with Celtics star Jason Tatum here in Boston about Nets-Celtics Game 3 tonight. So much more. Take a listen.
The brother is special.
Tatum takes it, makes it!
Guy is at a different level right now with his game and confidence.
You certainly have a chance to make a statement tonight. What do you expect from tonight's game?
I'm excited, being back in the Garden in front of our fans, in front of our home crowd for game three. There's nothing like playing a playoff game in TD Garden. So it's been a while since I've done that, and I'm looking forward to getting back out there.
There have been a few incidents in different NBA arenas this week with fans harassing players or their families. And Kyrie Irving came out this week and said he hopes that tonight he doesn't hear any racist comments from the fans of Boston. What did you think when you heard Kyrie say that?
You just hope that, obviously everyone is expected to act a certain way, whether if you're on the court and you're supposed to be a fan, cheer for your prospective teams or, say what you want to say in a, in a competitive manner. You can't cross any lines. I kind of understood what he was saying is about just trying to keep it about basketball. And I think most people should understand it, what he was talking about, just with the nature of everything that's kind of happened in the last couple of days.
Marcus Smart was asked if he had ever heard any racist comments from fans in Boston. His quote was, I've heard a couple things. It's hard to hear and then have those same fans support us as players. He said it's kind of sad and sickening. Have you ever heard anything like that from the fans in Boston?
I can't say that I personally have, towards me. But, everybody has different experiences. And Smart has been open about those incidents. And, like you said, it is sad. That is something that shouldn't be tolerated in any arena.
On the court, to have a teammate who then becomes an opponent, how much do you guys still talk at all or text or communicate? And what is it like going against a guy that you played with your rookie year?
Yeah, we still keep in touch. Great friend of mine. Not so much, during the playoffs while we playing against each other. It's a unique experience. My first time, I think, playing against somebody in the playoffs that I played with. It's cool.
Whether you guys win this game tonight, no matter how this series goes, it's a pretty open fact that this Celtics season has not gone as well or up to the bar of your first three seasons in Boston. What do you think needs to change for next season so you guys can have a better run all the way through?
It's been a weird year. I think that just the quick turnaround from the bubble may have something to do with it. We were obviously, I think, the most affected team by COVID this season. Myself included, we've dealt with quite a bit of injuries. We had high expectations, higher, as well as those people that watch us play. But, you know, I don't think you can undermine all the things that, you know, we went through as a team and individually. But, you know, we're still fighting.
Kirk, what's your reaction to Tatum's comments there?
Well, I mean, look, after the Nets finish this series, I think that Danny Ainge need to be accepting all phone calls that are not including Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Robert Williams. He need to answer the phone for everybody else as far as being traded.
Including Marcus Smart?
Yeah.
Richard, what about you?
No, look, I think there was obviously a lot that he said. If you go back and look at the start of the season, they were probably going to be ranked fourth behind Milwaukee, behind Philly, behind Brooklyn Nets. And so ultimately, you know, they've had a tough year. But as far as the comments about, you know, teammates and Kyrie's, everybody's experience is very, very different. So, you know, you could see that he was kind of struggling to say, I'm not trying to take anything away from Marcus's experience or Kyrie's. This is just my own personal one. So, you know, it can be difficult in those situations.
10 seconds. Go ahead, Rachel. I mean, you just kept rambling on like Steve telling us. Go ahead, Rachel.
Let's hope that both the Nets and Celtics are better teammates than the two of you together. I love you both. Thank you for joining us. The jump is back Tuesday after Memorial Day.